So today, Srimad Bhagavatam, we're covering chapters 5 through 12, and concluding the story, the pastimes of the three lives of Maharaj Bharat. It spans a good section of the Srimad Bhagavatam 5th canto from chapter 7 through 14. So, yesterday, I believe you heard the activities of Maharaj Bharat, his first life, or the first life we're hearing about, where he was the king of the world, and toward the end of his reign, he renounced everything and went to the forest to develop his Krishna consciousness. In those days, it wasn't living in the temple or going on Harinam. It was meditation and going to the forest and to attain perfection. So there he actually attained very high stages of realization. However, you heard that he got distracted by the deer, the cub, the small fawn, the deer, that was abandoned by its mother. And he saved it from the river, and it was quite a feat. And we heard, I hope you heard that, you know, the description of a Vaishnava, he's naturally compassionate to all living entities. And so who wouldn't be compassionate to a deer who's lost its mother at birth? So he took the deer in, and he raised it. But we saw how he became distracted. His Krishna consciousness became distracted, or his concentration became distracted. And just looking at the pastimes of Maharaj Bharat from what we hear, I've kind of summarized, again, like I did last time with Dhruva Maharaj, different points that we can focus on, or you can go back and try to focus on in your own study of Srimad Bhagavatam. But the first was, first we can take from these stories is his renunciation for the ultimate, for a higher purpose. He renounced the kingship for a higher purpose. And what was that? Krishna Bhakti, or devotional service to Krishna. But then we also hear another is this displaced compassion, or the dangers on the path of our devotional service. What can distract us? And you know, accepting things favorable for Krishna and rejecting things unfavorable. So that is covered in this pastime. And then rectification. That even if there is a fall down or a stoppage in this life, there's rectification either in the same life of a fall down, or as we'll see, in his future lives, he was able to rectify the mistake he made. So that's another thing we can learn from this pastime is rectification, straighten ourselves out, getting back on the path if we've gone astray. Another nice thing we'll see is his dependence on Krishna, how he fully dependent on Krishna. In his life of Judd Bharat, and we'll go into more detail, but again, this is just a summary. And then the final is the characteristics of a sadhu, or a saintly person whose prime objective is to deliver absolute truth. So that's the topic of today's verse. What we'll do is we'll read the verse in the purport, and then we'll summarize the pastimes of Judd Bharat, and then we'll focus more on the verse and purport again, just so we can keep it flowing. So it is 5th canto, 12th chapter, text number 11. Gyanam vishuddham paramarthamekam. Anantaram tva bahir brahma satyam. Pratyak prasantam bhagavatsthabha samjnanam. Yad vasudevam kavayo vadanti. Jnanam visuddham paramatamekam. Anantaram Anantaram tva bahir brahma satyam. Pratyak prasantam bhagavach chabha samyanam. Yad vasudevam kavayo vadanti. Please chant. Anam Vishuddham Paramatma Ekam Patyak Prasantam Bhagavach Chabad Samtam Vasudevam Kavayo Vadanti Anam Vishuddham Paramatma Ekam Anantaram Tvabhiri Rama Satyam Tak prasantam bhagavatshabda samgyam Yad vasudevam kavayo vadanti Yanam vishudham paramatam ekam Tatam Anyone else? Jnanam, the supreme knowledge, Vishuddham, without contamination, Parama Artham, giving the ultimate goal of life, Ekam, unified, Anantaram, without interior, unbroken. Two, also, Abahi, without exterior, Brahma, the Supreme, Satyam, absolute truth, Pratyak, inner, Prashantam, the calm and peace, the calm and peaceful Supreme Lord, worshipped by the yogis. Bhagavat Shabda Sangyam, known in the higher sense as Bhagavan, or full of all opulences. Yat, that, Vasudevam, Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev. Kavaya, the learned scholars, Vadanti, say. Translation. What then is the ultimate truth? The answer is that non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth. It is devoid of the contamination of material qualities. It gives us liberation. It is the one without a second, all-pervading and beyond imagination. The first realization of that knowledge is Brahman. Then Paramatma, the Supersoul, is realized by the yogis who try to see him without grievance. This is the second stage of realization. Finally, full realization of the same supreme knowledge is realized in the Supreme Person. All learned scholars describe the Supreme Person as Vasudev, the cause of Brahman, Paramatma, and others. So we could read the purport.
In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, Yat Advaitam Brahmopanishad Prasadi Tadapi Ashad Tanba. The impersonal Brahma, effulgence of the absolute truth consists of the bodily rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ya atma taran yami purusa iti so samsa vibhava. What is known as atma and antaryami, the supersoul, is but an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sat ash swa yahi. Purno ya iha bhagavan sa swayam aham. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilita 1.3. What is described as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, complete with all six opulence, is Vasudeva, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none different from him. Great learned scholars and philosophers accept this after many, many births. Vasudeva swayam iti sa mahatma surdulabha. Bhagavad Gita.
From the Bhagavatam 1 to 11. From the very beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Of material contamination and is transcendental to material qualities. It gives all spiritual success and liberation from this world. That supreme absolute truth is Krishna, Vasudeva. There is no difference between Krishna's inner self and outward body. Krishna is Purna, the complete whole. There is no distinction between his body and soul and as there is between ours. Sometimes so-called scholars... Want to scroll down there? Sometimes so-called scholars, not knowing the constitutional position of Krishna, mislead people by saying that the Krishna within is different from the Krishna without. When Krishna says, Man mana bhava mad bhakto majaji mam namaskudu, the so-called scholars advise the reader that it is not the person Krishna to whom we must surrender, but the Krishna within. So-called scholars, Mayavadis, cannot understand Krishna with their poor fund of knowledge. One should therefore approach an authorized person to understand Krishna. The spiritual master has actually seen Krishna, therefore he can explain him properly. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadakshantite jnanam jnaninastatvadarshina. Without approaching an authorized person, one cannot understand Krishna.
Which verse? Yad Vasudevam Kavayo Vadanti. So, here Judd Barrett is speaking or telling us what ultimate truth is, or as we become accustomed, absolute truth. This term is used over and over by Srila Prabhupada throughout his teachings. And so this conversation between Maharaj Rahugna and Judd Barrett, certainly absolute truth is being distributed. So before we get into this, let's just recap on Judd Barrett, what has happened since your last class. So he became attached to the deer, and he, at the time of his death, he was bewildered, and he remembered the deer more than he remembered Krishna. So, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam jantante kalevram. At the time of death, whatever we remember, that we will obtain. So, that's a real important lesson, that this is what our ante narayanam smriti, this is what our prosecution of Krishna consciousness is for, is so that, you know, when we most need to remember Krishna, we will. So the more we are in contact with Krishna throughout our lives, then the easier it will be to remember Krishna at the end of our lives. And the trick there is we don't know when that end of the life is there. So we have to remember Krishna always. So this is one of the rules Rupa Goswami gives. Remember Krishna always and never forget him. So whatever we're doing, whatever you do, offer, give away, Krishna says, do for me. So that will help us. So, but as we hear, even on a very high level of devotional service, we can become distracted. So Maharaj Bharat was distracted. And because of that, he fell down. And in his next life, he was born as a deer. So reincarnation, we understand a little bit about reincarnation. What we remember at the time of death, we will attain. So he attained the form of a deer. However, Krishna was very kind to him. In the form of a deer, he was able to give him his full memory of who he was. It's usually when we take birth again and again in reincarnation, the process of birth completely wipes out our memory of who we were before. And for Maharaj Bharat, he was able to remember by Krishna's mercy. So, you know, what happens when he wakes up as a deer is like, oh my God, what have I done? Just see what Krishna says is right. You know, yum yum vapi smaram bhava. To see what happened to me. What am I to do? So he immediately became very determined. This is some of his determination was shown. He became very determined not to be swayed again. And so he immediately went to sage's hermitage up where Shalagram Shilas are found in the northern India. So he stayed in the hermitage there, and he would hear the dissertations on Srimad Bhagavatam by the sages. He would hear absolute truth from them, and he was engaged in hearing and chanting. It's even said that the deer, Maharaj Bharat in the form of a deer, was engaged in Shravanam and Kirtanam. So then, at the end of that body, he obtained his next birth as who is referred to for the rest of this these chapters as Judd Bharat. He became the son of a Brahmana family. And however, again, Krishna granted him full memory capacity of his previous two births. So again, the same determination he had in the deer's life, he had again as Judd Bharat. And Judda, you know, literally means dumb or slow, or what we would call stupid, or just, you know, in some cases, maybe retarded, we would say. He appeared that way, although he was not. And the reason he took on this character was so that he would not get pulled away again by any people. Usually, what happens when people are dumb, deaf, blind, people usually avoid them for the most part, except their family. So his father was very loving to him. He cared for him practically day and night, hand and foot. He wanted to give him. He was a Brahmana, so he wanted to give him higher knowledge. He was trying to teach him the Brahminical life, how to be clean, how to worship the Lord, how to chant Gayatri. And so he struggled for time and time again, never giving up on his son. But Judd Bharat, he was very determined. I'm not going to be attached in this life, no matter to who. Even my father, he had a kind heart, you know, to take care of Bharat. But no, he wouldn't speak. He would try to teach him to chant Gayatri, and he would mumble. Actually, in the 80s, New Vrindavan had a wonderful drama troupe, and the Three Lives of Judd Bharat was one of their best productions. And they used to travel to all the Rathayatras every year and do this drama. And it was so wonderfully done. And showing, you know, in sometimes humorous ways of Judd Barrett trying to chant the Gayatri or, you know, washing his hands before, you know, going to the bathroom instead of washing his hands after going to the bathroom. So it was shown very wonderfully the life of Bharat Maharaj. But so his father tried again and again, but he just couldn't do it. And it wasn't that he was unqualified to teach, but it was, you know, Judd Barrett's determination not to become entangled, even with his father. So his father, at the end of his life, he had more than one wife, and so the Barrett was the was a brother. He had a sister, and so they kind of were taken under the care of his stepbrothers, and he had nine of them, and they were a little mean, as even in today's society, we'll see stepbrothers aren't usually the funnest people to be around. They're somewhat mean, harsh, cruel. And so they were like that to Judd Barrett. They were cruel to him. They'd give him menial tasks or very degrading tasks to do. And then just finally, they didn't even want to deal with him anymore. They basically made him a scarecrow. They put him out in the fields just to keep away deer and pigs, wild boars from eating the crops. So he very humbly took up this service, and again, within his mind, you know, he was concentrating on Krishna, hearing and chanting. But externally, he just appeared like a, you know, it's deaf, dumb, blind person. So his adventures are explained, how he was kidnapped by worshippers of Kali, and wanted to be, who wanted to use him as a sacrifice to please Kali for material benedictions. And we hear in there how, yes, there are many different prescribed methods of gaining material opulence and material assets, and some of it is by worshiping the demigods. So by offering, you know, a goat or a what they called a man animal, somebody again like Judd Barrett, who had no consciousness, not really a man, but if you offer to Kali, then she becomes very pleased. So again, he never protested. He just depended on Krishna throughout his adventures. And so even on the sacrificial altar, they were ready to cut him. But Kali, goddess Kali knew, she knew, oh, this is a pure Vaishnava. I can't allow this to go on. So she appeared, and she got rid of the dacoits. And Bharat Maharaj, you know, she bowed to Bharat Maharaj and offered prayers. Bharat Maharaj, again, keeping his Judda nature, his Judd nature, he just walked on. And then he just so happened to come across the king's procession. And the king, usually in those days, they would ride on palanquins. And, you know, we've seen palanquins, they, you know, at least four people, one on each corner. If it's a bigger one, they'll have two people on each corner. But at least here it's described there was one on each corner. And somehow or other, one of the carriers became ill and couldn't do his service, so they needed a replacement. So they just so happened to run into Judd Barrett, and he looked, you know, worthy to do menial servant. So they said, come on, you carry this palanquin. So he started carrying it. He's, again, surrendering to the situation at all times. But he was very careful in his walking to not step on any living entities. He would always be looking for ants. And so when you're very careful, you can't walk, you know, you just can't walk at a smooth pace. You're going to walk, oh, what is that? Is that an ant? Well, I don't know, maybe. And then you're kind of a little dodgy there, you know, kind of dodging and move. So this created a rumbly ride for the king. And so he stopped. He says, what is going on here? You know, who's in charge of these palanquin carriers? So he said, oh, it's not my fault. It's this new guy. You know, the new guy, he's just walking around, you know. So he chastised him. Oh, what are you, a fool? Are you? Maybe you should ride in a palanquin, and maybe I should carry you. You know, is that, would that be better? Would that be? So out of sarcasm, he chastised him very heavily. So Jedbar again, he just took it, whatever. But then he again, they started up again, and he walked, and in the same way he was walking, and the king just lost it then. He was, and his name was Rahugana. So he came down, and again he chastised him very heavily. And so then this was the first time this Jadbar spoke. And what did he speak? He spoke what we're hearing today, absolute truth. So what is absolute truth? Absolute truth defined many places over and over in Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's teachings and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Absolute truth basically is that truth that has no, there's no debating of what it is. It means it's absolute. Just like in an easy example Prabhupada would give over and over again, is that 1 and 1 equals 2. That's an absolute equation. There's no, you can't say, well, I believe that 1 and 1 is 3. It is a belief. No. 1 and 1 is 2. So it's an absolute thing that there's no debate. So what is the, again, this question comes up over and over again. What is absolute truth? Is it just an equation? No. It is understanding that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a person, and he is realized in 3 different ways, as we heard in today's verse, and also quoted in the purport, the verse from the first canto, second chapter, Vedanta Tattvas Vidas, that Krishna is understood. This absolute truth is understood in 3 ways: by Brahman, or the impersonal feature; Paramatma, his localized feature, present within every, along with every living entity, and also all pervading throughout every atom as well; and then as Bhagavan, the Supreme Person. So, Jadbar, he first of all needed to cut Rahugana's misconception of what he was considering absolute truth. He was considering that I am the king and you are the servant, and whatever I say should be done. So immediately, Jadbar first cuts that very heavily. And this is, we see the sadhu nature of Jadbar. Sadhu literally means to cut sometimes. And so speaking absolute truth is sometimes cutting to those materialists. It becomes very hard to hear sometimes that, oh, I am not the king. You're the palanquin carrier, and I'm the king, but you're saying I'm not? So it's very strong advice given to Maharaj Rahugana that you may be the king in this life, and I may be your servant, but in our next life, I may be the king, and you may be the servant. So what is that? Is that our absolute natures, to be king one life, servant another life, dog one life, a worm one life, human again one life? What is that? Is that our absolute nature? No. That again is relative truth. So the relative truth is something relative to our situation, whereas absolute truth is steady throughout. So going back to the Srimad Bhagavatam, when we hear that verse, that this non-dual substance is realized in 3 features, we have to also see that verse in context. Although it's used as the proof of Krishna being a person and the Supreme Person as the highest realization of absolute truth, we also have to see how that was being presented. In the Bhagavatam, 2nd chapter 10 through 14, we see this verse is within there. And we can read those. Life's desires should never be directed toward sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation, since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. So again, this is the same type of philosophy that Judd Barrett is giving to Rahugna Maharaj. And so again, okay, he mentioned we should inquire about absolute truth. What is the absolute truth? Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call it Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Then the next verse, the seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes the absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Sutri. So this is important. This is as we prosecute bhakti yoga, and as we hear Rupa Goswami when he tells us how bhakti yoga should be prosecuted, it should be done in a favorable way. Should be done and also concentrating on Krishna. So here it said the seriously inquisitive student. So if one is serious, because again, a lot of times we'll just hear the challenge. Oh, what are you saying is absolute truth? They're not serious to understand it. So no matter what we say, they're unlikely to accept it. But when they are actually serious, and then they become equipped with what? A knowledge and detachment. The other verse quoted today, Tad vidi pranipatena, paripasnena sevaya. Tad vidi. If you want to hear what the absolute truth is, you have to surrender to one who knows the absolute truth and render service to that person. So if you're serious, you surrender to a person to hear, and you get the knowledge, and from that you learn detachment. And then, by rendering devotional service, only then are you able to really understand what absolute truth is. And then it goes on. Another famous verse, Atapumbir Dujasheshtas. O best among the twice-born, it is concluded, then, that the highest perfection one can achieve by doing one's prescribed duties for one's own occupation according to caste division and orders is to please the personality of Godhead. So again, look at this in context. The discussion is absolute truth. How do you attain it, or how do you understand it? Becoming serious, equipping yourself with knowledge and detachment, and then doing something. There's doing. It is not just talk. So this Atabhumbir, this is showing us what to do. What do you do to understand this absolute truth? So whatever status of life you're in, whether you either the four divisions of social or the spiritual orders, doesn't matter. Whatever you're in, you must perform your duties to please Krishna. And again, coming back to pleasing Krishna means anusilanam bhaktir uttamam. Anabhilasita sunyam jnana vikamarantam. We give up jnana, we give up karma, and we favorably prosecute devotional service. And then he sums it up, tasmad ekana manasa. Therefore, with one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. So, realizing absolute truth or understanding the absolute truth is a process that we have to undertake seriously. Tad vidi panipatena. We must, to really get that knowledge, we have to surrender to a person who knows that knowledge. Not that we can read it from books. And there's another important verse from Mahabharata. Yamaraj asks Yudhisthira, what is the same question? What is the ultimate goal? What is the absolute truth? And many of us know this. Tarko pratishta srutaya ravina nasarvati yasya matam nabinam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajana yena katasapanta. And so he gives a few things that don't work. how to understand it. So the first thing, dry arguments. They're inconclusive. So just by putting forward arguments. Well, I believe this, I believe that. This is what I feel at this time is just like if somebody says, well, I feel that 1 + 1 = 3. And that's my personal opinion, and you can't tell me different. So, but it's inconclusive. And if I say, okay, I'm going to give you, if you say 1 + 1 or 2 + 2 = 4, I'm going to give you 4 singles, but you give me a $5 bill back. How long will they cling to that philosophy? They'll go broke very soon. So, it is not just your argument or what you believe or your faith, which is not concluded in any reality. And then he further says, a great personality, so this is the Munis, the sages, or nowadays we call them the philosophers. A great personality whose opinion does not differ from others is not considered great. So philosophers, they put their philosophy forward, and nobody is considered a great philosophy unless he can defeat that other philosopher. So they're coming forward with these different ideas. What is absolute truth? What is this? What is that? And so they're constantly going, you can't realize it from that, because one will say one thing, another will say another thing, a third will say a third thing, and somebody will merge them together but add something else. And so there's so much of that going on, and what Prabhupada calls a hodgepodge philosophy, mix it up, swirl it around. And then he goes on, shutayo, we mean, even if you study the Vedas, so the Vedas are knowledge. Even if you study the Vedas, which are so variegated, you cannot come to the right path. So we heard a little earlier, Judd Barrett, so demigod worship is in the Vedas. There's so many things in the Vedas. So how do we know what to take? What is applicable to us now? What is applicable to us, you know, 20 years ago? What is applicable to us, you know, in the previous yugas? What was applicable to us in the end of Kali Yuga? What is applicable to us in the Golden Age? So all these things can be found in the Vedas, and we can become confused by it. What is it? How do we know what part of the Vedas to use? Because, you know, we hear, we see so many things were prescribed in Srimad Bhagavatam. We see so many sacrifices were done. Meditation in the forest, surrendering, renouncing everything and going away. So how do we apply these things to our life? And this is one of the dangers, that not only can we be distracted by material things, but we can also be distracted by what we hear in Srimad Bhagavatam. How is that? By misinterpreting. So if we see, oh, even in the first life of Bart, so should I just give everything up? How do we know? Should we just give everything up and go to the forest? How do we decide if I'm ready for that? How do I decide if that's good? Or should I walk around like Rishabhdev? I think you've already done the Rishabhdev pastimes. The Avadut. Oh, he's pure devotee. Avadut, I should follow. Let me walk around naked. Right? Should we do that? It's in the Vedas. It's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He did it. Should I follow it? So many things are like that. Can we even do some more simple things that we're pretty sure of in the same mood as other great acharyas? Like here we see Judd Barrett, he's very heavy. Can we just approach everybody in a very heavy way, slamming the absolute truth down their throat? You know, again, these things are, it's inconclusive. So, where is the conclusion found? Mahajana, yena katasvanta, right? Yeah? Was that? Yeah, the spiritual master. Mahajana yena katasapanta. Following in the footprints that the Mahajanas, or great souls, or those who are fully realized in the absolute truth, what do they say? What do they dictate? How are they teaching it? How are they applying it in their lives? How are they applying it to those who are following them? How have they reapplied it? How is all of this happening? So this is how we, as you know, people just coming to Krishna consciousness, have so many questions. How do we understand? We approach the spiritual master. We follow those because so many things are out there. There's so many sources of knowledge that we can grab onto and try to find. But we must follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas and Srila Prabhupada. For us, for us, we are following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, who is giving us Srimad Bhagavatam. So when we read Srimad Bhagavatam and we come across sections which are discussing absolute truth, he shows us how do we apply it. How do we apply this Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan? What do we do? Oh, so he has given us our concentration in Gaudiya Vaishnavas is the Bhagavan aspect of Krishna. And certainly this is also the most enjoyable aspect of understanding absolute truth. It's not just dry philosophy. It is very attractive when we hear about Krishna. And hearing about Krishna, like we Tasmad Ekana Manasa. This is the point. Again, if you want to know the absolute truth, fully dedicate your mind and your senses on that one-pointed center focus on Krishna, his name, his form, his pastimes. Then, as we hear in Bhagavad Gita, as we surrender to him, he rewards us accordingly. Those who constantly engage in my service, I give them the understanding, will fully understand Krishna. So it's not just the question, tell me what the absolute truth is so I can know it and get on with my business. No, your business is to understand the absolute truth. And that's what devotional service is. So we engage our mind, our senses, everything in hearing about Krishna, and gradually we will, more and more, Krishna will reveal himself to us. So concluding this section, Jud Bharat tells the absolute truth, very, very strong words to Maharaj Ruhugna. And he, the next verse, he gives him also we'll read the next couple verses only just to kind of round out. He's telling, the verse we read is telling the three different aspects of the absolute truth, but then he centers it himself. He says, my dear King Rahugna, unless one has the opportunity to smear his entire body with the dust of the lotus feet of great devotee, one cannot realize the absolute truth. So this proof, the Mahajana Yena Gatasapanta. You can't understand the absolute truth without surrendering Tadvidi Pranipatena to a spiritual master. One cannot realize absolute truth simply by observing celibacy, brahmacharya, or strictly following the rules and regulations of household life, or leaving home as a vanaprastha, accepting sannyas, or undergoing severe penances in winter. So by, strict, just following the Veda, the Shrutayo Vibhina, this is what is being explained here. Just the Shrutayo Vibhina, that's not enough. There are many other processes to understand the absolute truth, but the absolute truth is only revealed to one who has attained the mercy of a great devotee. Who are the pure devotees mentioned here? So he says, you can't get it without the pure devotee, so who are they? In an assembly of pure devotees, there is no question of discussing material subjects like politics and sociology. In an assembly of pure devotees, there is discussion only of the qualities, forms, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is praised and worshipped with full of attention. In the association of pure devotees, by constantly hearing such topics respectfully, even a person who wants to merge into the existence of the absolute truth abandons this idea and gradually becomes attached to the service of Vasudev. So here distinguishes the three different realizations. There, although Brahman and Paramatma are also aspects of the absolute truth, they are not complete. And so by engaging in the service of Vasudev, who is Bhagavan, that understanding will reveal everything and you'll be fully attached to Krishna. And so then Maharaj Mahugna is hearing this. The descriptions of Sukadev, you can just feel him just melting in this understanding. He's just like, immediately, he's just, oh, you're such a great Vaishnava. He bows down to Judd Bharat, and he takes shelter of his feet, and he says, go on, please keep telling me more and more. This is the mood of the disciple wanting to hear more about the Absolute Truth. Tell me more, tell me more. And so then, again, Judd Bharat goes on. He tells this very graphic story of the forest of material enjoyment, which we won't go into, but there's two chapters dedicated just to that. First is the summary by Judd Bharat to the king, and then after Sukadev is done telling the story, Parikshit Maharaj says, wow, can you tell me more about that forest? Can you tell me that again? I want to hear that again. So he goes on. And then there's a nice conclusion. Shrutifal, which is a benediction of hearing this pastime. Devotees interested in hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam, regularly discuss the pure characteristics of Bharat Maharaj and praise his activities. If one submissively hears and chants about the all-auspicious Bharat Maharaj, one's lifespan and material opulences certainly increase. So the Shruti fall is there. You know, if you want to continue hearing and chanting, you can get inspiration by hearing this story of Judd Bharat. So we can end here. All glories to Prabhupada. Any questions? Yes?
As you said that we cannot understand absolute truth just by hearing about it, we have to do something, and at the same time we are advised to hear. So how do the two?
What's that?
Like absolute truth understanding.
Just by we're advised not to hear only, but we to engage in service, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the question.
Hearing is also service.
Well, hearing, of course, but hearing under the guidance of the spiritual master. Tadvidi panipatena, paripashanena sevya, upadet shanti te gyanam, gyanivas tattva darshanam. He can give you that tattva darshan. He can give you that absolute truth. He can give you that knowledge, but how do we approach the spiritual master? Rendering service, inquiring submissively. So there's action. Again, it's action. Hearing is also active service, but even just to obtain the hearing, you need to be an active servant to the spiritual master, to hear about him, hear about Krishna from him. He'll engage you in the service, because how much of us can just sit and hear all day as our service? It's hard to even make it through this half hour, right? Sometimes. For boring lectures like me, at least, it must be hard. So, but can we sit and hear all? No. But Prabhupada says again and again, we must engage 24 hours. So there's hearing, there's chanting, there's remembering, there's serving, lotus feet of the Lord, there's deity worship, there's preaching, the Shravanam, the Kirtanam, prayers, offering prayers. There's so many activities that we have, and that's what the whole Krishna Conscious Movement is there for, to give us all activities so that, you know, we don't get bored with one. We have so many activities to do, and all of it will help us in our realization of the Absolute Truth. We're going to chant the prayer. Sarira vijaja chachin. Questions? Who is Yamaraj? Dharmaraj. Dharmaraj is sometimes referred to as Yamaraj, sometimes referred to as Yudhisthira. His son, yes.
Is Vidura also Yamaraj?
Yes, Vidura's incarnation.
Vidura is also brilliant, Yudhisthira is also brilliant, and he is meeting.
Yes. These are very high topics. Not only can Krishna expand, but by Krishna's grace, his devotees can also be. Therefore, also we understand in Goloka Vrindavan, there are two sections. There is Chaitanya Leela and there is Krishna Leela. So some of those in Chaitanya Leela are also personalities in Krishna Leela. But Krishna can give that opportunity, especially when it relates to pure devotees like Vidura. Vidura shows he is, and sometimes we also hear there's partial incarnations of this person and that person. So by Krishna's grace, he can do it. Haribol.